on Business, Labor, and Consumer Affairs, and we'll open a, let's see, we're going to open a work session on House Bill 3363. Janet, can you help explain to us what we're doing right now, okay?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 3363 is back before the committee for a possible reconsideration. The bill passed out of committee last Friday with the Dash 1 amendments. This is the bill that establishes minimum efficiency standards for certain commercial electrical appliances and applies the standards to sales and then installation of new appliances over time. The first change would begin in 2007, and this patterns some of the legislation in California and Washington, but has different appliances and doesn't cover all the appliances that those states do. The Dash 1 amendments deleted the standard for digital television adapters, delayed the requirement related to commercial clothes washers for 2 years, so that would not begin until 2009. And it deleted all the provisions that required the Department of Energy to review the standards and deleted their authority to update or change the standards that will stay in statute. Mr. Chair, there was an error in the Dash 1 amendments on the first page. The word new was taken out with commercial clothes washers, and the word new should not have been taken out because it applied to the other appliances as well. And if the bill had gone forward that way, it would have made a sale of used appliances affected as well. So that was not what anybody intended. So the bill is back with the Dash 3 amendments today and needs suspension of the rules to reconsider it.
Thank you, Janet. Representative Shoffler.
Mr. Chair, I move the rule be suspended for the purpose of reconsidering the vote on House Bill 3363.
Representative Shoffler moves the rules be suspended for the purpose of reconsidering the vote on House Bill 3363.
Okay. Mr. Chair, having voted on the prevailing side, I move we reconsider the vote.
Yes.
Oh, excuse me. If that's for objections.
Oh, is there any objections? Seeing none, so Representative Shoffler.
All right, Mr. Chair, having voted on the prevailing side, I move we reconsider the vote by which we passed House Bill 3363.
Are there any objections to Representative Shoffler's motion to suspend the rules? Seeing none, Katie, would call the roll, please.
Representative Escobar.
Aye.
Representative Gilman.
Aye.
Representative Colby.
Aye.
Representative
Chopper.
Aye.
Representative
Aye.
Aye. Motion to suspend the rules carried. Representative Chopper. Let's see where we're at here.
What are we moving for here? To
reconsider the vote.
We've got to put these in. We just did that.
Okay. Well,
question, Mr.
Representative Escobar.
Okay. Now, if we adopted the Dash 3 amendments, the only thing it would change would be that new?
Yeah.
Or do we have to rescind the Dash 1s and then adopt the Dash 3?
We could do it as a replacement for the Dash 1.
Yeah, okay. We can do it as a replacement, yeah.
I move we reconsider the vote. Apparently, the first motion was to suspend the rules.
Suspend the rules.
Now, Mr. Chair, I'm moving we reconsider the vote.
Representative Shoffler moves we reconsider the vote on House Bill 3363. Is there any objection? Sent on. Ordered. Okay, now we're down to, my goodness.
Okay, then it's back before the committee.
Okay, I introduce Representative Shoffler.
I move we introduce the Dash 3 amendments to
replace
the Dash 1 amendments into House Bill 3363. Did we get that squared away, Parliamentary?
I think so. Representative Shoffler moves we replace the Dash 1 amendments with the Dash 3 amendments. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Order.
Mr. Chair, I move. Were we ready for the motion?
Is the Fred, the dash threes are okay with you, and Representative Dinkfelder?
They're okay.
Yep. We're ready to move.
Mr. Chair, I move we pass House Bill 3363 as amended. And rescind the subsequent referral to Ways and Means Committee.
Representative Schaffer moves that we rescind the subsequent referral to Ways and Means and move the floor, or move House Bill 3363 to the floor as amended.
With a due pass recommendation.
With a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, Katie, call the roll.
Representative Gilman.
Aye.
Representative Colby.
Aye.
Representative Kidd.
Excuse.
Representative
Thompson. Aye.
Representative
Steele. Aye.
Representative
Esteban.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. And Representative Dinkfelder will carry her bill on the floor. Thank you.
Had to do that just for new?
Just to straighten out one word.
Well, one word for one thing.
All
right.
Okay, let's see. We're going to open a work session on House Senate Bill 563A. Janet, again.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill was heard on Monday, and the bill requires water utilities to mail notices of water bills that are delinquent for more than 100 days to the person that's listed as an owner of the property in the tax records for the county. It applies to water utilities operated by public utilities, municipalities, cooperatives, and unincorporated associations. And the issue was people having to when they move into rental property, sometimes being faced with the water, or excuse me, the electric water being shut off because of a former tenant's problem with paying bills. Mr. Chair, there was a two amendments that were discussed as well related to the Medford Water Commission and the Westwood subdivision.
The chair would entertain a motion to move Senate Bill 563 to the House floor. Representative Esquivel.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 563 to the floor as is with a due pass recommendation with no amendment.
Representative Esquivel moves Senate Bill 563 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, Katie, you call the roll, please.
Representative Colby.
Aye.
Representative Kitts.
Excuse.
Representative
Colby.
Aye.
Representative
Aye.
Representative
Aye.
Chair
Brown. Aye. Motion carries.
Hopefully we put that on the consent calendar.
I think we can.
Absolutely.
Representative Esquivel moves we place Senate Bill 563 on the consent calendar. Any objection? It's on the consent calendar. Open a public hearing on Senate Bill 136. Janet?
Mr. Chair, Senate Bill 136 was pre-session filed at the request of the Bureau of Labor and Industries, and would delete an obsolete reference requiring contractors and subcontractors to pay flaggers prevailing wage rates on projects regulated under Federal Davis-Bacon Act. It's my understanding that this deletion will not affect policy whatsoever. It's just a redundant reference. But, Mr. Chair, there's a representative from the from Boley here to explain.
Thank you, Janet. Good morning.
Good morning.
Uh,
Chair Brown.
Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Mark Zoltan, the Legislative Affairs Director for the Bureau of Labor and Industries. As Ms. Atkins just described correctly, this prior to 1995, flaggers on federal Davis-Bacon Act did not cover flaggers. And so the state legislature enacted special legislation to put them under the state prevailing wage, even though it was a federal project. In 95, that was corrected on the federal level. They are now covered under federal Davis-Bacon. So this is just to clean up the language in the statute. It would not affect flaggers working on state projects. They would still have state prevailing wage. Only those who are on the federal projects and are now covered, there's no reason to have the redundant state language in our statute. And that's it.
Representative Shields.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So Mark, let's say the feds change their mind. And do we need to have this language in there just in case that happens and they decide 2 years, 4 years down the road that they're going to pull flaggers out?
Chair Brown, Representative Shields, I guess it's my opinion, and I think it would be the opinion of Commissioner Gardner, that it's not likely that the federal Davis-Bacon Act is going to remove certain folks, and I guess what he would argue is at that point it would be prerogative of the legislature and the labor commissioner to address that issue at the time. I'm not aware of that having occurred. Some of the folks on some of your fellow committee members here are probably more familiar with prevailing wage than I am, but I'm not aware of that, and I don't think the commissioner feels that we need that safeguard.
Okay, thanks.
Any other questions? Don't say anything. Why don't you just stay put, Mark, and I want to run back and forth. I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 136 and open the work session on Senate Bill 136. Representative Schaffler.
I move, Mr. Chair, that we pass Senate Bill 136 to the floor with due pass recommendation.
Representative Schaffler moves Senate Bill 136 to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, Katie, please call the roll.
Representative
Kitts. Excuse.
Representative
Chalker.
Aye.
Representative
Kitts.
Aye.
Representative
Gilman. Aye.
Representative
Colby.
Aye.
Chair Brown. Aye. Motion carries. Put it on consent calendar.
We should,
yes. Representative Schaffler moves that Senate Bill 136 be placed on the consent calendar. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? We'll open the public hearing on Senate Bill 137.
Chair Brown, for the record, once again, Mark Zoltan, Bureau of Labor and Industries. This is also a very minor housekeeping language cleanup from Commissioner Gardner. Currently, under the provisions regarding required meal periods, minors must take their meal period at noon and at no other time. Every employee, as you know, is entitled to a unpaid, unbroken 30-minute meal period if you work at least 6 hours. This would just remove that language and give the flexibility to employers and employees to take their lunch anytime they wanted if they were under 18, just as the adults do. They would still be required to meet all the other parts of the lunchtime or the mealtime requirements, but it would not. And I believe this language has been involved for decades and decades, but it is certainly obsolete in our opinion. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. Any questions? Representative Schaffler.
I just wanted to say, Mr. Chair, I started bucking hay when I was 12, and we'd eat on the hay rack or up in the barn whenever we had a chance. So I definitely support this. It makes sense. It's logical. People aren't out there starving these kids to death. They just do what they got to do. So thank you.
Knowing kids are about to eat when they're hungry, so that's not a problem.
You want to get them to work, you better feed them.
Any other questions? I don't see any. Thank you, Mark. We'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 137 and open the work session on Senate Bill 137. Representative Esquivel.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 137 that we recommend that we move it to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Esquivel moves Senate Bill 137 to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Seeing none, Katie, call the roll, please.
Representative
Shoffley.
Aye.
Representative
Shields. Aye.
Representative
Esquivel.
Aye.
Representative
Gilman. Aye.
Representative
Colby.
Aye.
Representative
Kitts. Excuse.
Chair Brown.
Aye. Motion carries. Representative Esquivel.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I recommend that we put that on the consent calendar.
Representative Esquivel moves that Senate Bill 137 be placed on the consent calendar. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Consent calendar. Open the public hearing on Senate Bill 576. Janet, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is going to really slow us down, I think.
Put the brakes on.
Mr. Chair, Senate Bill 576 would clarify in the Family Medical Leave Act that a professional is required to be working within their scope of license to be able to verify eligibility. So that even though a dentist is authorized to authorize the medical or sign for the medical leave, they wouldn't be able to do it for an eye problem, is kind of what that part of the bill does. And it also adds licensed registered nurses to the list of health care providers who may sign to verify eligibility. You'll notice in the list that nurse practitioners and direct entry midwives and naturopaths, optometrists are already listed, but the list does not include registered nurses. And I just also wanted to point out something on the back that it looks like the bolded language is adding Christian Science practitioners, but if you look at the deleted language just above that, they're already included. So, Mr. Chair, the Senator Bates and you have a letter from Representative Debbie Farr, and they were not able to come today, but we'll enter Representative Farr's letter into the record.
Thank you, Janet. Martin Taylor.
Chair Brown, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Martin Taylor, and I'm here today representing the Oregon Nurses Association. In lobbying, you learn not to spend too much time on a bill without opposition, so we'll be very brief. We do appreciate Representative Farr's letter and the chief sponsor on the Senate side, Senator Bates, who, as a physician, is very familiar with the forms that are required to be filled out for family medical leave. This bill originally was primarily intended to add registered nurses to a list that, as you can see, includes a lot of different providers, naturopaths, Christian Science practitioners, of dentists, a pretty wide range. It got some good scrutiny in the Senate side from the chair of the committee, Krasanski, and Senator Beyer. While they didn't object to the registered nurse part, they did note that this entire list included folks who were filling out forms that could be a wide range of issues, and I think actually improved the bill substantially by simply saying, adding to the bill by amendment, that you'd have to be practicing within your scope of practice, and then that way sort of limited what all the other folks who are currently able to sign these forms could be signing those forms for now. We would argue that, by and large, people operate within their scope of practice as a way of maintaining good relationship with their licensing board, and that they could lose their license for doing otherwise. But this is a good protection for the forms around family leave. In the case of nurses, probably the two situations that will occur the most that will make this of value to the patients of nurses are, current law says that you can three times miss work unpaid but without consequence from your employer if you have a sick child, but after the third time the employer can require essentially a note from your doctor. Well, for many of these children, that person's going to be a school nurse, and the kid's being sent home with chicken pox or whatever that kid may have, the note could more easily come from the nurse. The nurse is qualified within her scope of practice to say, hey, kid's got the chicken pox, and it means that that parent doesn't have to run out and find a physician to do that for them. The other case that it could presumably come up is a case where, let's say, a doctor is diagnosed somebody with pregnant, but the paperwork is lengthy, and that's you need to have, within 30 days, you have to inform your employer by having a fairly long form filled out. And this is sort of where Senator Bates came in and said, look, you know, the nurses fill out these forms, and then they track us down and have them sign the bottom of it. Well, in the keeping of medical records at hospitals, it's not at all unusual for a nurse to sign her own name, put a slash, and the doctor's initials. That would be within her scope of practice. What she's really doing there is reading a medical record. So she's qualified and capable of reading the medical record and saying, yes, this is in fact a case where someone is qualified for medical leave because of her pregnancy, and to indicate the provider from whom that was directed. So we appreciate the improvements on the bill on the Senate side and feel like this is a good bill for some patients to get their forms filled out quickly, and hope you'll send it along.
Thank you, Martin. Any questions?
Sure.
Ribs and Shoffman.
Hopefully we'll be able to fund more school nurses in the future, for one thing. But secondly, you mean this means my dentist wife can't get me out of work for an aching back?
I'm afraid you're going to have to stop doing that. Worked for a while, but I
got caught again. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Ribs and Holden.
Maybe I shouldn't ask this, but I'm just kind of curious. I'm curious about the treatment of an eligible employee through spiritual means on the back of this. That seems pretty wide open. Is there?
I am completely unqualified to answer that question. It was a statute that preexisted. This is just clarifying language. And in some previous legislative assembly, your representatives and senators at the time felt that was appropriate, and it's beyond my expertise.
Okay, thank you. I knew I shouldn't have asked.
Nobody knows.
Hope they're praying for me. That's all I got.
Thank you, Martin, for your testimony. Is there anyone else that would like to testify on Senate Bill 576? We'll close the public hearing on 576 and open a work session on House Bill 576. Representative Esquivel.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move that we send Senate Bill 576 to the House floor with a two-pass recommendation.
Representative Esquivel moves Senate Bill 576 to the House floor with a two-pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? I think maybe someone on the floor is certainly going to ask that same question that Representative Holman.
Red Paul's
right. Same calendar.
So someone had better find the answer for that.
I'll ask my good senator.
Is there any other questions? Our comments. Katie, call the roll, please.
Representative Shields.
Aye.
Representative Esquivel.
Aye.
Representative
Gunn.
Aye.
Representative Holt.
Aye.
Representative Kitt.
Excuse.
Representative
Chalkwell.
Aye.
Chair Brown.
Aye. Motion carries. Representative Holden, would you like to carry the bill on the floor?
Oh, yeah, that'd be a lot of fun. I think I'd love to do that.
I want to make sure I ask
or, do you think we could dodge the bullet and put it on the consent calendar?
I don't see why.
I'd gamble.
You might as well. I don't think it's a big... What was the vote in the Senate? Was it unanimous?
It was unanimous.
Yeah.
No, Schrader.
You wouldn't want me to kill this bill with a with a floor speech.
I move we put it on the consent calendar.
Representative Schaffler moves that Senate Bill 576 be placed on the consent calendar. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, it's on the consent calendar. Okay, I open the public hearing on Senate Bill 837.
Yeah.
Janet.
Mr. Chair, Senate Bill 837, and you should have the A engrossed version, was sponsored by Senator Shields for the Special Districts Association. It had a 24-1 vote in the Senate, and it establishes requirements for public bodies that self-insure for tort liability or property damage. The bill does include some provisions related to public disclosure and basic financial requirements, including a reserve account, a minimum annual contribution, annual independent audits, and adequate reinsurance against catastrophic losses. It has also a right of action of a public body against a program that fails to comply with these standards, and this is for pooled self-insurance programs. Mr. Chair, thank you.
Thank you, Janet. Asina Squires and Frank Stratton, please. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, Hasina Squires on behalf of the Special Districts Association of Oregon. Our association represents approximately 900 special districts throughout the state who provide services such as rural fire protection, water, sewer, irrigation, parks and recreation. This bill is a bill that is supported also by the League of Oregon Cities and the Association of Oregon Counties, and our intent here is to actually put some minimum standards into the statute for operating a self-insured public body pool. Our bill, I would like to point out, our bill did pass the Senate with 24 yes votes and one no vote, Senator Kurt Schrader. So we're hopeful that maybe we might get on the consent calendar with me today.
I hope you too.
with me today, yeah, because we wouldn't want anyone to kill it with the incredibly boring floor speech.
Amen.
Well.
with me today is Frank Stratton, Special District's Underwriting Manager, who would just like to briefly provide a description of the contents of the bill.
Good afternoon,
Mr. Chair, members of the committee. And
I was going to point out, we passed out your testimony at the beginning of the meeting, so it might have gotten buried.
I'll keep this brief.
Okay.
Thank you for the opportunity to be here today. In 1985, our association formed a self-insured property casualty pool because local governments at the time were unable to find coverage nationwide. And today the program serves over 30 types of local governments in Oregon with 900 or over 900 participating members. And nationwide, there's over 1,000 self-insured public entity self-insured pools just like ours. Self-insured public entity pools are designed to control the costs of insurance by pooling all the assets and funds of the public entities to self-insure. And as such, those funds and assets are property and assets of those public bodies. And as such, they need to be managed and controlled with the highest degree of financial transparency and for the sole benefit of those participating public agencies and the constituents they represent. Senate Bill 837 seeks to accomplish this goal by creating minimum financial requirements for the operation and maintenance of a public entity pool. Because self-insured public entity pools are owned by the participating members, they are exempt from the insurance code. And this exemption has created a loophole in the law where insurance brokers have found that they can form their own public entity pool, completely control it, and in some cases even appoint the board of directors for the program and run the program for the sole benefit of maximizing their profits and creating an exclusive marketing opportunity for the broker. This type of structure, we believe, creates an inherent conflict of interest and creates some of the commission problems that we've seen nationwide in undisclosed contingency commissions, et cetera. So Senate Bill 837, in summary, does the following. It establishes minimum financial requirements for the operation and formation of a self-insured public entity pool. And it ensures that any third-party administrator that runs a pool or serves as an administrator for the pool does so transparently through only fees from the public bodies and not through any undisclosed commissions from outside insurance carriers. And thank you for the opportunity to be here today, and be glad to answer any of your questions.
Thank you, Representative Schaffler.
Yeah, I'm all for this. It makes perfect sense. But what are the minimum required financial, like, for example, Damascus, a new town, how do they come up with showing they have the minimum financial requirements?
As far as if Damascus was going to become part of a self-insured program?
Right.
For instance, right now, Damascus is probably would become part of the city-county insurance services pool, which is a pool just like SDAO, mm-hmm. which is formed of most of the cities and counties in the state. And they pay a contribution into the pool, and then from then on, the pool manages the assets that Damascus would contribute into there. And so what we're saying is once the assets are contributed into the pool, the pool managed by City County Insurance Services needs to every year have an audit, financial audit of an independent outside auditor, just like any public entity would. They need to have an actuary study done by a certified actuary to determine that they've collected enough money to pay claims, that they have to disclose all those records to any public body or citizen who wants those records, et cetera. There's other controls in there in the statute as well, but it's just from our position, just makes common sense.
Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
Thank you. Yeah, you're right, it does. How many folks out there, if you were going to take a guess, and do you know of anyone that are getting these undisclosed commissions and are making decisions currently? Is this currently happening?
Right now, there's a broker in Washington that's trying to come into the state that basically has set up several pools in Washington and now is trying to do so in Idaho, in Oregon, in Georgia. They've been bought by a big national broker. Mm-hmm. And this program is completely controlled by St. Paul Insurance Company. And they've basically found this loophole that exists in most every state in the United States, mm-hmm. where they can exploit a weakness in the statute by creating what's essentially a fully insured program with a low deductible and totally insured by St. Paul Insurance Company, but yet they tell the insurance commissioner's office, this is a pool, so we don't have to meet any requirements whatsoever of the insurance commissioner. We don't have to file our rates. We don't have to disclose our financials, et cetera. And then they fall back on the fact of, well, and the statute, not only that, but the statute doesn't provide any requirements for what self-insured pools have to do. So they can basically do whatever they want, and no one is looking over their shoulder.
Interesting. Thank you.
Any other questions? Don't see any. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else that would like to testify on Senate Bill 837? Seeing none, we'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 837 and open the work session on Senate Bill 837. Representative Schaffler.
Mr. Chair, I move we send Senate Bill 837A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Schaffler moves Senate Bill 837 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, Katie, please call the roll.
Representative Epstein.
Excuse.
Representative
Gilman. Aye.
Representative Colby.
Aye.
Representative Pitts.
Excuse.
Representative
Shoffley.
Aye.
Representative
Shields.
Aye.
Chair Brown.
Aye. Motion carries.
Mr. Chair, I move we put it on the consent calendar.
Representative Shoffler moves Senate Bill 837 be placed on the consent calendar. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none.
No boring speeches.
Open the public hearing on Senate Bill 83. Janet.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 83 was pre-session filed for the State Board of Examiners for Engineering and Land Surveying. It modifies the definition of significant structure, but it doesn't modify it very much. In CNLI 9 of the bill, it changes an and to an or, so that it has to an essential facility for purposes of defining significant structure. It has to be more than 4,000 square feet or more than 20 feet in height. So only have to meet one of those requirements to take it over the threshold for being a significant structure. This has to do with purposes of requiring a certification of the structural engineer. And it deletes an obsolete provision in the statute regarding registration without an examination. Mr. Chair, it makes line 8 and 9 match up with lines 19 and 20 because there is an and in that sentence, and they did not match up before. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Janet. Stuart Albright, please.
Hi, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Stuart Albright. I'm the president of the Oregon State Board of Examiners for Engineers and Land Surveyors. A week ago, I told you I was done on Tuesday. It turns out I got two more weeks, so I'm still the president of the Oregon State Board of Examiners. I will also be very brief. What we're trying to do here is obviously a certain amount of housekeeping. We have a date of October 99 by which we can continue to register structural engineers by prior practice. Given that date has come and gone, it's just clutter in the revised statutes. The main issue we're trying to address here is that for rural communities, small essential facilities of one story are required to be designed by a licensed structural engineer. The level of complexity in a one-story building is not necessary to have a structural engineer do that work. work. So for small and rural communities, if they want to do a 5,000-square-foot garage that would house an ambulance, they would have to have a registered structural engineer do the design on that. Those structures are adequately covered by the International Building Code, which the state adopted last year, and there's no real reason for that. And so we're trying to get the two provisions in this law to match. It doesn't change the ultimate definition of an essential facility, which addresses other provisions in law. It merely addresses the definition from the standpoint of what has to be designed by a structural engineer, which is a specialist. And there's no reason for a structural engineer to have to design a one-story garage for ambulances. The reason for the or is that previously, with the and, it would have to be under 4,000 square feet and a one-story to be exempt from needing a structural, and that's really overly restrictive.
Any questions? Don't see any.
All right.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Is there anyone else to testify on Senate Bill 83? Seeing none, we'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 83 and open work session on Senate Bill 83. Representative Schaffler.
Mr. Chair, I move we send Senate Bill 83 to the floor with a due camp pass recommendation.
Representative Schaffler moves Senate Bill 83 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, Katie, call the roll, please.
Representative Gilman.
Aye.
Representative
Holby. Aye.
Representative
Case. Excuse?
Representative
Schaffler.
Aye.
Representative Teal.
Aye.
Representative
Esposito. Excuse?
Chair Brown.
Aye. Motion carries.
Mr. Chair, I move we put it on the consent calendar.
Representative Schaffler moves that Senate Bill 83 be placed on the consent calendar. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection on the consent calendar? And I'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 574.
I'm not sure we have anything here.
And there's no one here to even testify. Okay. Could, let's see, if we can just stand at ease until we find Scott Berry, huh? Okay, so stand at ease. See if he wants to talk. Affairs Committee back to order, and do we wait for Scott to get here?
I think we should just move it out, Mr. Chair.
And it was unanimous in the Senate.
Okay.
Even Mr. Chair?
There's Janet.
Are we open?
Oh, we're open.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, Senate Bill 574, and you should have the A engrossed version, authorizes a contractor who builds a new structure to present for recording the written warranty agreement between the contractor and the original owner to facilitate the handling of construction defects and express warranties, and also sets forth what needs to be in the warranty agreement. These are for either commercial or residential structures, and it's optional. It's not, no one's required to do this, but they may present for recording to, in the deed record, the written warranty agreement. the line 17 and 18 of the bill say that it would cease to affect the title to the property 10 years after the date the instrument is recorded. And, Mr. Chair, I don't know. I know there was a discussion of the 10-year period on the floor and reducing that to 6 years. I don't think that this would be directly affected, but that is a question that wouldn't be handled necessarily in a conflict amendment because it's not the same statute, but that might be what the 10 years is geared to. So that was the only question I had. This was at the request of the Home Builders Association. It did pass the Senate 25-0. Senator Monis Anderson voted against it in committee but voted for it on the floor. So.
Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Schlossberg.
I spoke to the proponents about this yesterday, and we talked a lot about the consumer in here. This is going to help the consumer, actually. I'm comfortable moving it out, especially in light of the fact that there is no one here to oppose it either.
Okay. So, thumbs up for that.
Thumbs up.
Okay, let's close the public hearing on the Senate Bill 574 and open the work session on Senate Bill 574.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Schaffler.
I move Senate Bill 574A to the floor of the unit's recommendation.
Representative Schaffler moves Senate Bill 574A to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? We've already had our discussion, haven't we? All right. Katie, call the roll, please.
Aye.
Excuse.
Aye. Aye.
Excuse.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries.
Chair, I move we put it on the consent calendar. It was unanimous in the Senate, unanimous in committee. So,
Representative Schaffer moves Senate Bill 574 be placed on the consent calendar. Is there any discussion? Are there any objection? Seeing none. Janet, do we have anything else for the committee?
No, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thank you. And with that, we'll be adjourned.